You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Today is Tuesday, June 7th. We're talking Reds baseball, and talking Reds baseball today with Chris Wells. She is pinch hitting for Mark Sheldon on this Tuesday, and Chris is the analyst at Fox Sports Net Ohio. Chris, we can't thank you enough for coming on board today to talk Reds baseball. And, of course, Chris, you know, it's no secret the Reds are having a very difficult 2016, but I got to think that last week was maybe their high point of the season, or at least their high point in the last 2 months. They took 5 of 7 games from the Rockies in Colorado, 3 out of 4, and then they nearly swept the Nationals if a ninth-inning comeback on Sunday did not fall just short. It's only 1 week, and it's only a 7-game sample, but I got to think that for all the difficulties this Reds team has been through, at one point losing 12 out of 13, to just have a week and have a stretch where there was not constant negativity had to do this team a world of good.
Well, I think you're right on the button there, Matt. I can tell you that, you know, this is a rebuilding year for the Reds, and the fans know that, and the Reds have reached out to their fans and asked them to be patient during this whole rebuilding area, be rebuilding year or years. But if you're a player on the team, you don't want to hear that. I mean, you're in the big leagues maybe for the first time, maybe you're just hanging on, or maybe you're on a multi-year contract. You don't want to go out there and lose on a nightly basis, especially get embarrassed by giving up leads late in the ball game or getting blown out. So the reversal began when the Reds really went through Milwaukee and then played very good baseball in Denver against the Rockies and came back, and they took that momentum right against the Washington Nationals, who were atop the division when they saw them. And it was kind of interesting because there were a lot of emotions going on with Dusty Baker coming back to Cincinnati, the Nationals bringing in, you know, Gia Gonzalez and Steven Strasburg in the first couple of starts, and the Reds ran both of them out of there. So it was very interesting the way the Reds have been able to finally put some things together and feel good about themselves as a team, which, if you've ever played athletics, that's what you want. In a team sport, you want the whole team to feel good.
Yeah, you brought up a good point that, you know, it's one thing for the team to convey a message to the fan base and say, you know, look, we're going to have our bumps on the road. Be patient. This is a process. But like you said, it's a much different emotional state with the players themselves. You know, how have, you know, in your dealings with the veterans on this team, the Brandon Phillipses and the Joey Votto's and Jay Bruce's, how trying has it been for these guys who have had success and have a track record of success, not just from a team standpoint, but individually too, to kind of keep their heads up and display for the younger guys, you know, what it means to be a professional, even when things aren't going well?
Well, that's a key word, being a professional. But at the same time, you're thinking, hey, these guys like Votto and Bruce and Phillips and Cozart, I mean, just a few years ago, they were in the playoffs 3 out of the last 5 years. So, you know, you're wondering, well, what the heck happened, and how are they going to handle the team that is supposedly going to lose 90 to 100 games this year? But they've been very professional. And you try to lead in your clubhouse. You try to lead on the bench and of course, lead in the field as well. But they like things when they get turned around. Obviously, the main problems the Reds have had this year have been related to their pitching, especially their relief pitching. And, you know, if they start getting better starting pitching and they don't have to go to the bullpen as early, the offense is coming around a little bit. Votto is hitting the ball much better now than he did in the beginning of the year when he was hovering around the 200 mark. And I think that can be, you know, everybody kind of wants to get into the act when that happens. And I think that's where they are right now. You know, these veteran players aren't going to give up. They know that they've got more than one responsibility. They've got a responsibility to themselves, to the fans, to their teammates. And you try to go out and give your best every day, no matter.
And, Chris, I want to backtrack just a little bit. You brought up this past weekend not only the Nationals in town with all their star-studded power in the lineup and on the pitching staff, but that meant the return of Dusty Baker as well. Dusty with the Reds for 6 successful seasons, 3 of those years, took them to the postseason. How was Dusty greeted by the fan base at Great American Ballpark, and how did Dusty feel himself upon returning to his old stomping grounds?
Well, Dusty felt probably, let me cover that for, he was happy to come back here, number one. I think Dusty felt like he was maybe somewhat misunderstood as a Reds manager, that maybe underappreciated would be a better term, because Dusty, you know, did lead them to the playoffs. It had been a long drought since the Reds had been there, and Dusty was at the helm when they went back. And I think because they didn't get any deeper in the playoffs than they did was the reason why Dusty was let go. So he looks at the Reds now compared to when he was here and say, see, maybe he wasn't the manager after all. he didn't voice those things, but you can kind of tell by talking to Dusty, that's probably where he was coming from. The fans like Dusty here. You know, they appreciated what he did here. He was always a very fan-friendly. He was a guy that was always got the most out of his players. So I think that his trip back to Cincinnati, other than the two losses and the near sweep that the Nationals had here at Great American Ballpark, was very nice.
And why was it that, you know, Dusty was underappreciated at times during his six-year tenure? I know you brought up the main reason was that I think the expectations from the fan base that, okay, the postseason's great. We want more. We want a pennant. We want a world championship. Was it merely that, or were there other factors involved?
I think that was probably only the fact they didn't get deep into the playoffs. Two of the playoff appearances of the three that they had were one-game playoffs that they had to play in Pittsburgh against the Pirates. So that was one bad thing there. The other part of it was that when they finally did make the next round in the playoffs, they went out to San Francisco. They won their first two games, and they just needed one more win. San Francisco came in here, and the Giants swept the Reds three straight before going on to win the World Series. So that was something that really left a bad taste in everybody's mouth. You know, you start second-guessing the manager. You start cutting and slicing every game, pitch by pitch, of what the manager did wrong as far as substitutions and so on. So I think that that's part of the problem that the Reds fans have with Dusty, is that he never was able to get them over the hump. Their expectations may have exceeded the ability of the ball club. You don't really know. But at the same time, you can't tell fans that. Once you get into the postseason, they want to go all the way.
No question there, and it's a very exclusive club when you hit the postseason every October, and unfortunately for Dusty and the Reds that year, they ran into the Giants on an even-numbered year, and we know what they've done in even-numbered years, 2010, 2012, 2014, and they're right in the thick of it again here in 2016. Long way to go, but they certainly have the track record, do the Giants, so we'll see what happens there. Getting back on track, talking Reds here with Chris Welsh. He is filling in this week for Mark Sheldon, and Chris, obviously, no shame in taking two out of three games from a first-place Washington team, but it still stings a little bit to think how close they were to sweeping that series. They were up 5-0 as early as the second or third inning that game, only to watch John Moscott give it away in the fourth. And we've heard rumblings the last couple days that Moscott could be the odd man out once Anthony DeSclafani gets back to action, which could happen on Friday. And as we talked about before we hit the air here, Moscott is indeed the odd man out. Give us an update on that.
Well, he has. He's been sent down to minor leagues. The Reds made room on their roster. They brought up Steve Selsky, an outfielder, to take the spot on the roster. So that's where they're going right now. I got to tell you that there's room at the end in the Reds rotation right now. If you're a healthy arm down in AAA, there's no better place in baseball to show your stuff off than in the Reds organization, because right now they're still waiting for some of their mainstays to get healthy. Homer Bailey still on the disabled list, recovering from Tommy John surgery, probably won't be ready until sometime in July. Anthony DeSclafani has had an abdominal problem since spring training in mid-March, and they expected him to be back a long time ago. He's getting closer and closer. Raisel Iglesias, the opening day starter, is on the disabled list with a shoulder injury that sidelined him for a while now. And we read recently and talked to the people in the organization to tell me that when he does come back, he'll be coming back as a reliever. The same for Michael Lorenzen, who was projected to be a starter in the rotation. He'll be coming back probably as a reliever when he comes back. So, you know, there are a lot of opportunities here for guys like John Lamb, who's pitching tonight against the Cardinals, and Mike Leake, for Brandon Finnegan, and so on. So Dan Straley has thrown the ball very well. So if you've got an opportunity, it's time to take advantage of it. Unfortunately for John Moscott, that didn't work out for him, but he's a good young pitcher, and I think he'll be back at some point.
Yeah, he really struggled on Sunday against the Nationals, and unfortunately for him, that was his last chance. So he's down in AAA, returning soon, as you said, Anthony DeSclafani. And, Chris, you brought up, too, that both Raisel Iglesias and I'm drawing a blank here, Michael Lorenzen, when they
Michael
come
Lorenzen.
Back to the Reds, they're both going to be in the bullpen. What is the rationale there? Because I know, as you said, they do have some arms in the rotation that are throwing well right now, in particular John Lamb and Dan Straley. But to have both these guys placed in the bullpen, what is the Reds' strategy here?
I think it's all about protection of the arm, to be honest with you, Matt, and there's no other reason for it. Raisel Iglesias, when he's healthy, he's shown himself to be a brilliant young pitcher. Really a special young man with a lot of strikeouts, good control, lots of different pitches. He reminded me of a little bit of a young Pedro Martinez. And Michael Lorenzen is a young man who played outfield for Cal State Fullerton before he was the number one pick for the Reds. They bring him in to close games. He'd throw 100 miles an hour. And that what they saw with Lorenzen is the more he pitched, that velocity began to go down a little bit. And I think that they may think that his stuff matches up better in the bullpen. And, of course, the Reds, after trading a role as Chapman last year, are still looking for somebody to be that ninth-inning pitcher. And it's been a rotation of a lot of different guys who will pitch in ninth inning so far this year. So there's some opportunities here, but I think they're just mainly going to try to protect those good young arms in Iglesias and Lorenzen just because they don't want to mount the innings and put some stress on either the shoulder or the elbow.
Yeah, unfortunately, J.J. Hoover was not the answer to Aroldis Chapman in 2016. He has been since sent down to the minor leagues, and you brought up a good point that both Iglesias and Lorenzen have electric arms. A lot of mileage left in those young arms, so maybe one of those two could be a ninth-inning solution for this team at the back end of that bullpen. Chris, in the final little bit we have here, the MLB draft takes place on Thursday, lasting through the weekend, and the Reds in a good spot. They'll have all but one of the top amateur talent available to them at the number two pick in the draft behind only the Phillies. What are you hearing about who the Reds could draft with that number two selection?
Well, I can tell you that all ball clubs are very close to the vest about who they're going to draft, but they've all also have had conversations with those high-round draft picks already, finding out how much is it going to cost to sign you. Now, pre-draft deals are not legal, but, you know, it doesn't mean that there aren't conversations going on. So, you know, the one guy in the draft that I think everybody's looked at is A.J. Puck, the left-handed pitcher, 6'7", out of Florida. If the Phillies don't draft him, there's a good chance the Reds may take him. But the Phillies evidently are on him pretty hard. Jason Groom is a left-handed pitcher he's a high school pitcher out of New Jersey. 6'6", very hard thrower. They say he may have the highest ceiling of anybody in the draft. Reds are certainly on him. They're also on another high schooler named Riley Pint from Kansas. He's a 6'4" right-hander who throws hard. If you're talking about position players, the three names that I keep hearing coming up about the Reds are Kyle Lewis, who's a right-handed hitting power hitter from Mercer University. Hit a lot of home runs this year. He's a big, tall guy, 64 inches tall, and hits him a mile. Nick Senzel is a very interesting name. He's a right-handed hitting third baseman from the University of Tennessee. He's a Scott Boras agent. I don't think that scares the Reds off, but there are a lot of people that think Senzel is very close to major league ready as they come in the draft as far as hitters go. And if you're looking for somebody local here for the Reds, there is a player down at the University of Louisville, which is only 90 minutes from Cincinnati, Corey Ray, a left-handed hitting outfielder down there. He's a combination of power and speed. He's got a lot of stolen bases. He's got a nice arm in the outfield. Those are among the players that the Reds have to choose from. But, of course, when you're choosing second, you have to figure out who the Phillies are going to take first, and then you've got those next five or six players to choose from then on. And it'll be interesting to see who the Reds have, because this is the highest draft pick the Reds have had in a long, long time. And there are a lot of people around this ball club that are simply saying the Reds cannot miss on this one.
Absolutely agree with that. And that's a good place to wrap this one up, as the MLB draft takes place on Thursday, the Cincinnati Reds selecting number two. But Chris Welsh is number one in our book. Chris, thank you so much for filling in this week. Hopefully we'll do it again at some point in the near future. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras Cincinnati Reds.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.